What I want to cover today in depth is the 8, the 9, and the 1. We can bounce around on the others a little bit, but I would really like to focus on these three. And so I want to start with it's a continuous prayer through all 9, but I want to just do the just top 3 today, and then we'll do the next 3 tomorrow. So I want to open with the prayer of, Dear God, when I insist that my way is the only right way, it is then I break peace. Help me to make peace. When I compete for power and control, it is then I break peace. Help me to make peace. When I am too numb to experience my very life, either too asleep or too busy with the unessentials, it is then I break peace. Dear God, help me make peace. In Jesus, our model. Amen. Okay, the 8, as I was telling you earlier, is the controller, the boss. The highlight is control, not only control of their own life, but also it is important to control everybody that you love. It is important to not allow them to make mistakes. I'm going to start with some statements that 8s are familiar with and see if you can identify with any of them. I'm going to read about 20 statements. I am very good at standing up and fighting for what I want. I sense others' weak points quickly and I will push them there if I am provoked. I find it easy to express my dissatisfaction with things. I'm not afraid to confront other people and I do confront them. I enjoy the exercise of power. I have a sense of where the power resides in a group. I am an aggressive, self-assertive person. I know how to get things done. I have trouble accepting and expressing my tender, gentle, softer, feminine side. I get bored easily and like to keep moving. Justice and injustice are key issues for me. I protect people who are under my authority or jurisdiction. I think of myself as being an earthy person. Generally, I don't care much for introspection or too much self-analysis. I think of myself as a nonconformist. I don't like to be cornered. I don't like to be told to adjust myself. I think of myself as a hard worker. I have trouble just letting go of things. I have trouble letting things just be. I think other people create their own problems. The 8s, like I said earlier, to be is to be strong. Their favorite tool is intimidation. They have the ability, like, what is the snake that can puff itself up bigger than, it's actually pretty harmless, but it can really, adders. They're good at that. Promote conflict to determine where the other person's stance is. Can create an argument when there isn't one there, just to find out how the other person, how they will react, because their security is in knowing where everybody's at, so that there's no guesswork. You know who's in power, and then at that point, it becomes very important to manipulate things to the point where they're in power. Been known to lie, cheat, do it. Now we're talking really basic here. Not too many scruples.
Who was this?
This is the 8, the controller.
The 8.
Mm-hmm.
Who was it that you just read?
This is all about the eight.
Oh, so all the eight. Okay.
This is all about the eight. Mm-hmm. Find that one of their an eight's compulsion is lust. May not, in lust, I'm not talking just sexually, I'm talking about the lust for life. Just lusty. I don't know how else to, a good term that would be, but we'll go at everything with great gusto. And there's a tendency of, in that gusto, of also taking control of it. If the being, even in say in a marriage, of being the leader of the family and being the father to the children and overly doing it, of not allowing the others to be, but it has to be according to my standards. No one else's standards are good enough. You don't know what you're talking about. I am in control. I am the way of doing things. My way or the highway. They promote, like I said, promote conflict to determine the other person's position. And the real uncomfortable place for an eight is in not knowing. They are very, very concerned if on surprises, don't like surprises because it rips the rug out from underneath them. They're not in control in a surprise. And it's important to stay on top in the hierarchy. They're a challenge. Mission impossible, if you so choose to accept this challenge, to evolve, to pass through rather than being stuck in this mode, is learning to accept personal weakness. Of saying, I think like it's in the 12 steps, that I am not in control. And being able to allow people, even though it goes against the grain, of allowing people to do it their way, to do it their own way too, for everyone to have control of their own lives rather than being totally in charge. Self-assuredness and assertive are wonderful attributes. Everybody needs them to function healthily. We need to be able to trust ourselves, but we also need to be able to trust other people. And the motives that I was writing down this morning was the real motive in life is to become self-reliant, to act upon their own self-interests, to have a true impact on the environment, and also to prevail over others. It's a real, real toughie to let go of control for an eight. They will, and how they relate, they just overdo. Again, it's back to that lustiness. Just overdo. We've had some wonderful famous eights. Martin Luther King, they feel, was probably an eight. Deborah, Samson, also probably King David was an eight. It's, again, all these attributes, what I'm focusing on is the negative side, because that's our shadow side. It's the side that we aren't willing to acknowledge in ourselves usually. And it's only when we step on the toes that it means that your foot was out there far enough to get stepped on. on this, the 8, 9, and 1, again, that was the top half of the circle. Those are the people that have their first response to any stress or danger, their first response will be anger. And of the three, in each of the three categories, you'll have an external, a totally withdrawn or a core person, and the internal. The boss is the external. Everything is, the reality is the outside. It's the extrovert. And so when they're angry, everybody in the room is at fault. I have no blame. If there's a problem in the situation, It's the always the other person that needs to change things. There's very, very seldom, and I have to keep reminding that we're talking about a person who is really stuck in this role and not willing to move out and to explore other facets of their personality, but they're stuck in this. The eight. Thank you, I just lost my train of thought on that. I have some stories here of people that have told their stories as being strong eights. Let's see if this will... All through school, when I was the one who was going to take on the teacher for my friends, I thought I was looking for the truth which would come out as questioning authorities. Did they know what they claimed to know? Where did their information come from? I never thought anybody liked the good kids. I thought they liked me better. I wasn't going against authority because I was trying to alienate anyone. It was that I wanted the attention of the other students through a challenge, through a struggle, and I thought teachers was going to respect my spirit and my strength of mind. I rarely considered the possibility that my opinions could be wrong. In a way, it didn't matter anyway, because it was the active confrontation that excited me and made me feel alive. As an adult, I've taken on projects without any consideration that I haven't the background and really can't perform. Lately, I took an article from a national magazine on the new gene technology without having taken even an elementary course in biology. I just assumed that I could do it. Work captivates me. It's all work and no play, and then play as hard as I can and don't work at all. Whatever it is, it's all or nothing. Here's another story. I've always generated a myth of invincibility about myself. I remember wanting a piece of pie late one night, a few minutes before the pie shop closes. The shop was across town, so I took the motorcycle and cut across the Telegraph Avenue at top speed. The cycle hit a hole in the road at a construction site where the warning light was down. I made it up on my feet with blood all over my pants, and all I could think of was kicking the bike into gear. I remember fending off a couple of people who were trying to help with the thought in mind that I had to get to the pie before it was too late. It had nothing to do with heroics or pie. It had to do with the enormous rush of having made it through again. It is incredibly painful to me to feel as vulnerable as I do when all that power is gone. So I keep the myth alive with high speed as a kind of metaphor for the fast lane where I go full out, because without that, it feels like nothing happening. For a boss or a nine to be out of control is intolerable, absolutely intolerable. From there, I want to move on to the nine, who is absolutely, totally out of touch. They are in the middle between the extrovert and the introvert. The nine is the person who totally relates to everybody. Not just relates, but merges. Like I said last night, if you're in conversation with two people and one of them has, say, a real strong Texas drawl, the nine pretty soon will have a Texas drawl. The reason that the name of the sloth comes out is because of their ability to merge with everyone around them. They've totally lost touch with themselves. They have no clue of who they are, and it's virtually impossible to make a decision for themselves. That is their... Well, since I'm not married anymore, I'll tell a story on my mother-in-law. When she was around us, we gave her the idea of coming to live with us. She really liked the idea. I spent several $100 fixing up a room for her to live in. When she was with us, she was going to move in with us. Then I got to talking to her friend, and she had made plans of moving in with her friend when she retired. They were going to travel. Okay. Well, what's she going to do? Well, when she was with us, she was going to move in with us. It was a great idea. When she was with Ruth, she was going to move in with Ruth. It was a great idea. She and yet, at the same time, she never moved in with either one of us. She ended up going doing something entirely different. It's just who's ever there at the moment is who of where she was at, and totally merging. Here are some famous statements from the nine. Most people get too worked up over things. Most things in life aren't worth getting upset about. I'm almost always peaceful and calm. I like time to just do nothing. I'm an extremely easygoing person. I can't remember the last time I had trouble sleeping. While there are some differences, I feel most people are pretty much the same. Generally, I don't get too enthusiastic about things. I want to insert here, one of the things of not making any decision is apathy. There's because of that pulling, being so merged that too generalized, there's no movement. There is nothing so urgent that it can't wait until tomorrow. I have a need for outside stimulation to get me going. I hate to waste my energy on anything. I look for energy-saving approaches to things. My attitude is, don't let it bother me. I can be dispassionate arbitrator because one side is as good as the other. I hate to be unsettled. I generally follow the line of least resistance. I take pride in being a stable person. I tend to play things down to get other people settled down. I don't think of myself as being all that important. I have trouble listening and paying attention. And I agree with this statement, why stand when you can sit, and why sit when you can lay down? They're extremely apathetic in most cases, but the high side of it, they are also extremely sensitive. They can be totally so compassionate because they merge. They do feel what you feel. Very cooperative. They're agreeers, but at the same time they can be mediators because of being able to identify with both sides. They can be the common, help people come to common ground. But they've got to be able to do that without blending in. That's the hard part of being able to see the other side without becoming the other side. My favorite stuff, the to be or not to be, to be is to be content. The status quo is most important. They want union with others to preserve the status quo and to avoid all conflicts and tensions, anything to bring things back to peace. The stories for the nine. It was damned if you do and damned if you don't. I was the youngest of four boys, and I did what my parents approved of. Then my brothers would get on me. And if I went with my brothers, then I was looked down upon by my parents. The easiest way was to stay hidden, to not take either side, and to stand there and space out until everybody went away. I remember once being punished by having to sit in a chair facing the corner. I was still there for a few hours later when my mom remembered me, and by that time I was so far inside myself I could have sat there all day. My father was, this is another story, my father was energetic and clever and related best when he was being adored. Mom had a lot of problems of her own and very little energy for the kids. It felt like safety was in sliding between the cracks without a ripple or a bump and keeping everybody comfortable so that I could be included. There was always the feeling of getting along with others, not because I really wanted to, but because their views felt louder to me than my own. I like this one. This is all. I've been here. Even though I think I'm very, very strong, too. I'm chopping carrots for lunch at noon. People are coming over, and I'm quite clear about what I've decided to make. I'm not sure whether I am really up for company, but I start on the carrots anyway. Pretty soon, my mind wanders off on several trains of thought that seem equally important and relevant at the time. Laundry has to be done by tomorrow, so does the telephoning for next week. My mind moves into an unresolved conversation with one of the phone people, which brings up a memory of another conversation. I'm also seeing the drift of the curtains in the currents of the room, which brings another memory to the surface. I'm still in motion, but have likely shifted to sorting laundry. It gets to be like a dream, the real room with the chopping board and the piles of clothes and the phone list half completed, and the rarities of all which seem just as important as the fact of guests are arriving any minute. The nines, I said, are seeking peace, and like the one guy said, of that sliding into the cracks, of not taking sides and not becoming active, but just invisible. All of these, in this particular book especially, goes into the family system and how, like I was saying last night, all of these characteristics, we embody all of them. But as small children, we found one that really worked well in our family system. And because it worked there, it's going to work in every system. Except that's not always true. Every group can only handle one leader. caretakers are great people to have available, unless you're a caretaker. The perfectionist is, their motto is to be perfect. And they are not only hard on their environment, they're very hard on themselves. They have almost always a very high moral discipline. They live in a place where the things that they were taught as youths, the values that are taught, are, it's black and white. There's no gray areas. They're reformers, perfectionists, usually a little on the self-righteous side. Have some problems with jealousy. Their power tool is they have extremely demanding internal standards. Anything that is around is compared to how it should be or could be. And there's always, always room for improvement. It's the want to be right. They strive for a higher environment and an improving others. They can always justify their own position to what has been beyond them. And the ultimate is to be beyond criticism so as not to be able to be condemned by others. Their challenge is to find serenity in accepting their own personal wants and desires that maybe go against what they learned, what their internal standards are. That's a biggie. That their wants and desires are okay, even though it may not be the internal standards that they grew up with or were taught as children. I put much effort into correcting my faults. I am often bothered because things aren't the way they should be. I hate to waste time. I often blame myself for not doing better. Often the last flaw can ruin the whole thing for me. I have trouble relaxing and being playful. Voices critical of me and others frequently chatter in my head. I seem to worry more than other people, I feel almost compelled to be honest. I feel almost compelled to be honest. I sometimes sense a puritanical streak in myself. Being right is important for me. I frequently have a sense of urgency that time is running out and there is still so much left to do. I feel a need to be comfortable. I feel a need to be accountable for most of my time. I could easily be or am a scrupulous person. I can identify rather easily with crusades against evil. If something isn't fair, it really bothers me. I feel almost compelled to keep trying to better myself in what I am doing. I feel I have to be perfect before others while others will love me or approve of me. I frequently feel frustrated because neither I nor others are the way we should be. I seem to see things of right or wrong or good or bad. Structure is important. Disciplines, great ones for disciplines. I can remember I lived in the village here for a couple years and we had a couple people that were always trying to bring upon disciplines for us to follow. That was their comfort zone. It wasn't mine, but it was theirs. The stories for the ones. One of the things my experiences with ones is in wanting everything to be so perfect, it never gets finished. Oh. Now you hear some snickering.
You hit a few nerves.
Wanting it so badly that I got stuck up on the preliminaries for 2 years. Every step of the decision had to be so perfect that I couldn't get myself enrolled. First, I had to square my desire to paint with my political beliefs, because from a political standpoint, I saw my own expressionist leanings as socially self-indulgent. Then I had to measure my love of nature and the outdoor against the choice of art. All through school, I would get myself motivated to study by promising myself that if I worked faithfully for the week, that I'd go out and shoot baskets on Saturday morning. So Saturday would come, and I would have finished everything. But instead of going to play, I'd think, okay, I got the job done, and that was the purpose of promising myself. So instead, I'd trade off basketball for two chores that I had been avoiding. If I do the chores, I get to go, otherwise I don't. I made myself earn my fun and often wouldn't give in to myself even if I had earned it. Traffic is an incredible annoyance to me. If everybody would just obey the rules, I could live with it, and there have been times when I've become so incensed that I've had to take action. My feeling is that we're all stuck in traffic, and if one person takes advantage of the situation, then we all have to suffer for it. My breaking point is when a driver sides along the line on the exit ramp, wanting to be let in through, though yeah. Before it's his or her turn. Yeah. My response is to break out of line myself and publicly crowd the car off onto the shoulder. When I was a kid in New York City, I used to like to go to the different neighborhoods and see if I could pass myself off as Italian or Yiddish, or in Greenwich Village as an artist. I liked being somebody else because I didn't worry about what people thought of me and could afford to say things I wouldn't have let myself even think of at home. There is definitely a dark side to the one. that last one of, there were several stories in there of having this persona at home of being very perfect, But they liked to travel to places where they weren't known so that they could be whoever they wanted to be. One woman said that she went to France and was a prostitute. And then she'd go home and take up her regular life again, of really having two different sides, and that's the only way of allowing it to break out. But the ones are incredibly hard on themselves. My housemate, like I said earlier, is a one. And she, it's hard for a one to play. There's no sense of play. For her, play is to go out and take a nice long hike because she hasn't had any exercise all week.
Because it's fun. She needs it.
Yes, she needs it. You don't play because play is fun. You play because you need it. It's healthy for you. Yes.
Now, anger plays a part in all three of these?
Yes, okay. I'm on the perfectionist, anger is definitely there because no one's conforming to their internal standards. But it's not okay to be angry, so it's suppressed. It's totally suppressed and hidden, and even to show anger is not perfect. To be angry would not be perfect, and so it's totally repressed. So it's like the boss, it's totally expressed, and the perfectionist is totally suppressed. And the nine, the sloth, they're just totally out of touch with it. They just melt away from it, rather than reaching out, trying to make any corrections or changes. It's just totally melted in. Each one of the categories has, like the caretaker would be the expressed. The performer is out of touch with it. They're just trying to get everybody's approval. And then the tragic romantic, again, it would be suppressed. So all of these have the in and the out of each category. And that's where, it depends upon our temperament, I think, which way we go with it. Because you have, say, two children that are in the same family system. One of the stories in there was of a boy. This was one of the boss's stories that I didn't tell. And he grew up in the inner city with alcoholic parents. And how he moved against that is he became a boss. He fought. He pushed against the system at every point and avenue that he could find. Where at the same time, the next person, depending upon the temperament, may turn into the sloth and totally just melt away from it all, just revert away from it. So it has a lot to do with our real beings of who we are. And the purpose, again, is to recognize these, because by being stuck in just one mode, we see reality through this mode. Like the person who, the perfectionist, cannot move into a fuller life because they don't allow themselves to move past the wanting everything perfect, that there is more than one way to do something. And in that, by being, having this barrier between us, between me and life, and another essence that's having the barrier between me and God, because it means that in one way or another, I am taking care of my reality, rather than trusting fully in God and allowing the bigger picture to happen. I'm converting the world to my agenda, or seeing it through my own particular perspective. And that is some ways it they refer to in one of the books is of the major sin in each of us, of whichever one we get stuck in, that is our conversion point, of when we can finally pass through that, let go of it, then we step into the full light of God, because at that point then we have learned to trust, not ourselves, but to trust God that everything works for the good. And at the same time, if we can learn, not really learn, as it is discover that we have all these attributes, and they're all very, very important, because that's who we are, and it's through this that we learn. If you look at all of those, I probably ought to put up the positive words for them too, because in a sense, if you looked at it in the right way, I guess you could even look at these and see all those traits in Christ, in Jesus. If you looked at him in a negative point of view, I mean, he was a hermit. He retreated. He was a boss. He was a leader. He was definitely a boss when he was in the temple and kicked the money changers out. Number nine, the peacemaker. He was able to, even though there was total chaos around him, sometimes he could just absolutely remove himself from it. And yet he had a vision. The perfectionist vision of a better life for all of us. So there's of learning to move through it and beyond, not push up against it and run away from it, but to learn to accept that this is who I am. I don't like it, but it's only until we can accept it that we can move beyond it. It's a bitter pill. So, has anybody identified with any of these three that they could have some stories to share? It's kind of a scary thing, but
I have a question about. You pretty much described the first three, the boss and the perfectionist and the sloth, very well. suppose you were an extreme in one particular, any one of those.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree that through spiritual training that you could balance it somewhat. But could you take one of them and show a couple of practical steps to lighten yourself? Say you were the boss, and your whole life, you've done this for 20, 30 years. Where would you start to break out of that? If you identified that that's who you were.
I think the first step has already occurred when accept the identification of this is what I am doing. It's not who I am, but this is what I am doing. And accepting the fact that this is behavior that I really don't like, I can see instead of bringing people closer to me, or I'm getting closer to God by these actions, that it's actually pushing them away of wanting to change the behavior. And at that point, then a person would start watching the red flags watching, becoming self-aware is probably the best second step. The first step is recognizing it and acknowledging it. And then the second step is watching one's own behavior to see when and where this happens. And at that point, recognizing the red flags and saying, no, I'm not going to do that this time. As I am a giver, and one of the main characteristics of a giver is not taking care of my own needs, but making sure everybody around me is taken care of, because then they will become dependent on me. And it's when I start giving myself away, that's my red flag. When I put myself in an uncomfortable position to make somebody else comfortable, then I know that's a red flag for me. What are my motives? Is the motive goes reading that quote, love, if you're doing something in the name of love, you're not going to destroy it. When we're in habitual behavior, we're trying to take care of ourselves at somebody else's expense. And the boss is not a leader in the true sense of the word, of leading the group to a transcendent place, but they're just trying to control the group for their own safety. It's always a very egocentric maneuver that we're into, rather than a social or an all-encompassing viewpoint. It's, I'm taking care of me. And like I said, the giver, on the true sense of the word, is real necessary to the community. But when I'm giving just so that other people become dependent upon me so that I can manipulate, there's something wrong in the picture. Yeah.
Well, you know, now as you read one today, I think I'm one instead. But I don't know, because what I don't understand about nine is like how would you know that person is angry, because they don't ever act in any angry way, so why do they fall, how do they figure out that they fall in the angry category? Because they're never angry, is that why?
Not angry, but more in non-active, non-participating in the fact of, is it apathy, removed from it, not taking part in it, not having an opinion one way or the other. Yes, definitely, they really do have an opinion, but they're not in touch with it. It's very much suppressed, very, very buried. Because in one of the stories, the person talked about how invisible they felt in their family system. And that was the safety point, though, because by being invisible, they never got any of the flack from anybody. That was one of the families. I think it was a child from the inner city with alcoholic parents, that kind of thing. That was by dissolving into the woodwork.
Right. Well, you know, I was thinking about this. This is kind of weird.
Good.
You know, like when you take the other continuum of like different personality types, like diagnostic ones, like compulsive and those kinds mm-hmm. of things. Could a person say, like, as they change roles through life, skip around the circle?
Oh, you bet. Mm-hmm. You bet. In fact, there is a pattern to it.
Yeah, because I think I skipped around the circle a couple times already.
Good. You're not stuck then. You're growing, honey. Yeah, that's great. That's
Well, it doesn't feel great, really, because I don't
really... And then growing up never feels great.
Yeah, that's why I think I'm the one. It's not fair.
Yeah, I thought I saw somebody over here. Question.
Well, I said observation. Terry was asking about how you make changes, and at least from my experience as well as my observation, usually you don't until you, I think you said earlier, it doesn't work, which usually means you run into some problem where it doesn't work. I think in the case of the eighth boss, it's somebody who is confronted with a situation where they cannot control it, you know, they get cancer, mm-hmm. something, and they get to a point where they have to accept the fact that they are not totally in control of their life because they have no other choice, and that's usually when they start working on it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no alternative.
Mm-hmm. The offside of not accepting it, the woman that I said goodbye to today, we have quite a history together. I met her through, I was dating her brother, and we ended up doing a business together, the three of us. And her brother and I were in a significant relationship for about 6 years. During that time, we had this business. And her brother is a boss, and he was a great leader until he was young, and it went to his head because we had a major success on our hands. And he took over, and he was controlling my life and Beth's life. And everything to the point where at this point he has the business to himself. He has totally alienated both of us. We got out of the business, totally alienated. And you know what? It's all our faults. He has absolutely, it is entirely, if only we had done it his way, everything would be fine still.
Did you have to flee?
Yes.
Yes. Is that a healthy thing in that particular situation?
I think so, because if there is, how long do you beat your head against the wall? I mean, he's still in a very dysfunctional situation. There, I mean, you can do so much, and then you have to take care. I had to take care of myself. I went to a prayer seminar with Gerald May one time. I think he's Episcopalian, and we were talking. He has a book out called Addiction. And someone asked him, what do you do in the case if someone you love is very dysfunctional? And he said, encourage them till they hit bottom, because they're not going to, you cannot tell them anything's wrong. They're totally in denial. And you can stay with it as long as it's not too unhealthy, but if it becomes totally unhealthy, I don't recommend anybody staying in the situation.
Because I've identified myself last night, maybe as a caretaker, but today this perfectionist cropped up as maybe a second portion. I'll see tomorrow if mm-hmm. the caretaker is still stronger. But when I had two-year-old children, I remember having a duty list that I had to go through. The laundry had to be done, the bathrooms had to be cleaned. Everything had to be done on a certain day of the week. Every first Friday I did windows. And only when everything on my list was done would I allow myself to knit or to read and do the things that I needed for myself. I'm a caretaker and a nurse. I'm also a supervisor, but I'm not like the boss. But I spent 35 years being married to one who was very strong. And I'm wondering if that may be what bumped me into the perfectionist caretaker, or if maybe that's why we got together in the first place.
It's kind of the chicken and the egg there, I think. Because we are attracted to certain types. And there's certain types that, just face it, I doubt very seriously if there'd be two leaders get together.
Mm-hmm. Not very close.
Maybe the ideal situation would be two caretakers. That wouldn't work either, huh?
But might we find one part of each wheel that we identify with a bit more strongly?
Yes, yes, definitely. And in that too, I kind of thought about at one point of doing this with a color wheel, mm-hmm. where the blue, like if I had a blue and an orange, a yellow and the red, and how the blue comes around and it comes into the yellow. There's shades of green. Mm-hmm. And like in the case of maybe the nine would be the true blue, and as you get closer to a one, you would be coming, you'd, so that way you could see that there is an intent that, like I say, you might be a two-ish one or a one-ish two. You may not be just exactly perfect one characteristics, but you'll lean into some of the other. Like myself, as a caretaker, I can also put myself on hold and go into performer mode. Beth and I were talking about that last night. We were talking about, has there been times of trauma in your life? What have you done? And I have caught myself totally on hold, able to perform without any emotion at all, just totally on hold until after it's over with, and then fall apart.
But don't we sometimes do that at the same time in our public life or our private life? Let's say, for instance, for a long time I was chairman of a department.
Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness then I was only teaching. But even then, I think my weekend life and was different than my professional life. And it wasn't I was two different people, but once Friday came, I was doing different things. In a way, I wasn't doing all different things, but don't we kind of pigeonhole things so that at one point we almost have to be boss running an apartment because people are dependent upon it.
Right.
And the other parts, in a sense, you might be perfectionist.
Mm-hmm.
And another part, you might be almost a hermit.
Mm-hmm. I think we all need some hermit in us to really...
And you almost need that
when
you're living the public life. And now I'm retired and I'm just really trying to really think things. And there are different functions, quite different functions. Same person, though, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And I think to me that's the healthy, that's the optimum position to be in. Being able to pull out of our personality, or being able to pull upon what is appropriate for the situation. Yeah.
He missed this yesterday. In being the boss, you could be the head of the department, but we're talking about the boss being in a negative way, but the positive side of boss would be leader.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you have to do both sides.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And today, I think tomorrow when I put them up there, I will put both the negative and the positive.
Well, in that case, you're really defining. If you don't do it, a lot of things go wrong for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. I think that the of a boss, there's the controller or the leader. Mm-hmm. They're the same thing, but they're different.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's like what I was saying about caretakers. We couldn't do without a Mother Teresa. We're getting real close to the time, probably about, it's almost 11:30. I have, where'd it go? There is also a closing that I want to do with this, of the Litany of Freedom, that I'm going to just read the first three of today, starting with the eight. Lord, I am free because with your grace I know only you can judge, because only you have the perspective as well as the power to make an unjust world just. I can relax. It is not up to me alone. Lord, I am free because with your grace I know I am loved and I am a lover, because you have touched me with your love. I am free because with your grace I know I am part of your world and your process. I participate in your perfection. It is not up to me alone.